Blog Talk Radio.
Scientists Exposed radio show, part of the Freedomizer Radio Network. Yes, we trust science. It's just scientists we don't trust. Visit madscientists.exposed for many ways to listen or call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air. Again, that number is 319-527-6208. And now, here's our lead investigator, Suzanne.
Hi, and welcome to another exciting week on Mad Scientists Exposed. And this one is kind of strange. We've mentioned it before, but there's some strange stuff going on in the solar system that is not weaponized, but the secrecy of it, I think, will be used ultimately as a weapon. And as I unwind it, you might see what I'm thinking there. What's going on in the solar system is, I don't know where about where you live. I live in Phoenix. The sun is bright here anyway, but it just seems like it's so much brighter than it normally is. And I've been watching several science channels on YouTube where they keep track of satellite data for us. BP Earthwatch is one. He's got links from his website to all kinds of solar data and satellite data and solar system, you know, watching things in telescopes. And another one is called Higher Truth Channel, and he doesn't have a website, actually, which I wish he did, but he's looking at a lot of the same satellite data that BP Earthwatch is looking at with a slightly different interpretation, although they come to the same conclusion as to what's happening, but not necessarily the cause of it. And then there's Mr. MBB 333, MR MBB 333, and that's a science channel out of Gilbert, Arizona, which is another suburb of Phoenix. I happen to be in Chandler, and Gilbert is directly east of me. And so my guess is that his home or office or wherever he's making his videos from is probably within 10 or 15 miles, maybe as many as 20 miles away. But I don't know. You know, the freeways, you can lose track of the miles around this town. But he puts up videos where he's showing that the UV rays, all three of them are showing that the UV rays that are reaching the Earth are much higher than you really would see on a regular weather map. And so, you know, I've been searching online for UV warnings, and they're just not coming out in the weather charts that we normally look at, and that weather people on the news stations look for to you know, tell you what's going on out there, the temperatures and everything. And Mr. MBB 333, he's actually proved on video several times now that if you have a UV app on your phone that tells you what the UV levels are, where you're living, if you actually put a UV meter out in the sun, it's much, much higher than what it's actually telling you in your phone. And so, yeah, he can, you know, and in Arizona, we expect high levels anyway, but he can pull up his phone app and it'll tell him, you know, near noon that it's, 4 or 5 level out there. And I've embedded a map at, this color-coded map at madscientists.exposed, so you can see what the forecasts are that day. And, but anyway, the app will say it's 4 or 5, you know, moderate to high, even up maybe 5. But if you actually stick a UV meter out and measure the actual UVs, this is over the last few days especially, but it's been going on for a few months on and off, It'll say 8, 9, 10. Sometimes it'll go off the chart above 10 UV levels. When your phone is telling you one thing, you know, the official government-issued data will say one thing, and then the actual meter in your hand that you can get off of Amazon, wherever you want to get them, it will be, you know, double that, easily double that. And so he's attributing these to, mostly, to coronal holes. And a coronal hole is on the sun. The sun has a corona, and the corona is kind of like the atmosphere of the sun. It's the cloud. It's not water clouds, but it's a structure that normally shields the Earth from the severity of solar radiation. And so the sun will throw off flares. There's a lot of magnetic features in the sun, and the flares will reflect back down off of the corona back into the sun beneath it, or they'll arc over and come back down into the sun. And sometimes they rip war loose, and you know, if the sun is facing just the right way with respect to the Earth, we can get a lot of solar material ejected at us, and that's called a coronal mass ejection. And you know, there's some beautiful pictures on various solar astronomy websites. Online, one that the other channel, Higher Truth Channel, recommends is called Helio Viewer. Coronal hole is when that corona actually has a hole in it, and you can see through the cloud structure of the sun to the surface of the sun. And they don't look that severe in normal times, but right now we're having no sunspots at all, and we're getting these big coronal holes that are. You don't normally see when there's no sunspots. You don't see them this big. And the sun will make its rotation, and these coronal holes will come up, and they've been so big that sometimes, like, the whole bottom of the sun looks like somebody's peeling it like an orange. There'll be a giant, giant, giant coronal hole just radiating down into the space south of the sun or north of the sun at the poles. And when there's a big hole like that, you know, that it's the corona isn't there to reflect the solar wind back onto the surface of the sun. Solar wind is mostly hydrogen, I believe, and helium. And it's hard to describe what I've been seeing on these channels, but I have links to them, and you can go check them out. You know, each video is 10 or 15 minutes long that these people put out on a regular basis. And I recommend you all subscribe to them and watch what's going on. They'll go to various aspects of weather that's going on, because this is affecting Earth weather. And the UV thing, though, it just struck me. We have this big coronal hole that just rotated past the Earth, and we had a lot of solar wind from it. And it's kind of amazing. A few days ago, Mr. MBB333 predicted that there would be a lot of auroras. And, you know, because these things affect the Earth's magnetic field. And, in fact, there is so much going on out in interplanetary space right now that we're having effectively magnetic storms that are feeding energy into the core of the Earth and causing all these massive increases in volcanoes and earthquakes and floods and weather changes that we're having. It has nothing to do with mankind. We're not causing it. We can't stop it. We can't start it. It just is what it is. And there's a lot of theories as to where this is all coming from. There is a helium cloud, and the satellite data picked up all this. And the weirdest thing, though, is we're getting solar wind from two different directions, which, how can that be? We don't have two suns. And so there's this whole speculation out there as to where it's coming from. Is it just coming from interaction of regular solar wind with this helium cloud that the solar system is passing through? But where did the helium cloud come from? Was it just floating in space and we're just traveling through it? Is it coming from Jupiter? Well, Jupiter's been there forever, and why should it be any different now than it's been in the past? Although one of these three channels, BP Earthwatch, thinks that all of this is coming from Jupiter. But Mr. MBB333, I can't tell that he's made a speculation as to where it's coming from. And then the third channel, the Higher Truth Channel, he watches these solar satellite data very carefully and closely, And he gets really, really annoyed. And, you know, that I can't, he gets annoyed when data goes missing, and it has gone missing in the last few days when some of these readings were off the charts. And he gets annoyed that you know, the Weather Service isn't putting out warnings because we're getting so much solar wind these last few days, particularly over this past weekend. The coronal hole is starting to aim away from us. So the only solar wind we should be getting is from the second direction, which nobody will admit is happening, because that would point to the idea that maybe there is a planet out there that they haven't told us about. It's not one of the recognized eight, I guess. They demoted Pluto a few years ago, so there's eight recognized planets, you know, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and then there's the gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and there's many ways to pronounce it. Probably the prettiest is Uranus. You know, I hate the other two pronunciations, so I don't know what else to say. But anyway, Neptune normally is outside of the orbit of Uranus. Sometimes it's inside because, you know, the orbits are kind of skewed. But Pluto doesn't count. Then outside that is the Kuiper Belt and the Oort cloud where the comets are coming from. And we've been having an awful lot of asteroids go by lately. And there's speculation that some of these things that are happening to the Earth right now couldn't be happening unless there was another planet that they're not telling us about. And I have my theories as to why they're not telling us about it. According to some of the calculations, it would be a gaseous giant larger than Jupiter, and too large enough that one of these channels, the Higher Truth Channel, is calling it a brown dwarf. And a brown dwarf is larger than Jupiter and smaller than the red dwarf TRAPPIST-1 that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where NASA announced these seven, they called it Earth-like planets, but they're Earth-sized planets. They're really, from their orbits and their proximity to their star, which is nothing like our star, they're not like Earth at all. They're just similar in size, you know. But I hope y'all can follow what I've been trying to describe to you. If there's a brown dwarf in our solar system and they're not telling us about it, why? That would effectively make our sun a double star. Even though a brown dwarf isn't officially ignited into the brightness of a star, it does radiate in frequencies we can't see. So that makes it easy to hide. And there's all these theories about, well, if it's out there, it's actually not traveling in the same plane as the rest of the planets. You know, they had, you know, you've all seen the pictures with the sun in the middle and the planets rolling around it like on a dish around the planets, except for Jupiter, which is so big, it actually pulls the sun a little bit off its center. And so Jupiter and the sun are just holding hands, and they're kind of spinning around each other. One big fat one that doesn't move a whole lot, and then the smaller one, Jupiter, and but it's definitely not just one orbiting the other. They're kind of like a pair. And the theory is that there's this one that's even bigger than Jupiter out there, and it's traveling slower because it's normally so much farther out there. And but then there's, y'all have probably heard about the theory of Nibiru, N-I-B-I-R-U, where that's the planet that its orbit is so skewed from everybody else's that it's got kind of like a north-south component to it, much more than spinning on a plate with the rest of us. It's coming like from the north down to the south, or from the south up to the north, or whatever it's doing. It's coming in every 3,000 years or so, 3,200 years. It swings in like a comet from way, way, way far out there, makes a pass at the sun and swings out again. And this thing, if it's large and a brown dwarf, is going to have its own magnetic field like Jupiter has its own magnetic field. The Earth's magnetic field is apparently powered by the sun. It's the solar wind comes in and powers it, and the molten iron in our core reacts to it, and there's all this motion going on, and we've got this magnetic field going on. Mars doesn't have much of a magnetic field because it doesn't have a whole lot of iron in its core, and the same for the moon. They don't have a whole lot of, and that's why they don't have atmospheres. You need that magnetic around the planet to protect its atmosphere, and so the two of them have, the moon has, I've heard the moon has about a 3-inch atmosphere. That's what my kids told me. I mean, that was, back when I was in school, all of it. The moon has no atmosphere at all, and they, what my what they knew by the time my kids were in school is that the moon has like a 3-inch atmosphere. And I guess we can Google that up, but whatever, you know, that's certainly not usable in my perspective. And Mars, you know, Mars has a large enough atmosphere, can have windstorms and stuff, but it's very, very thin. I kind of didn't find the movie The Martian very believable. You know, he's growing potatoes in this thin atmosphere, but anyway, where are they going with this? With this, whatever the source is of this extra helium and this extra solar wind, it's interacting with the solar wind from our own sun, and we're getting extra high radiation now that's hitting the Earth. We're just being pummeled with it, and the videos, I was just astounded. I follow all these three channels, and they talk about various science topics, but they keep coming back to this one, what's going on in space. And all three of them just meshed right up last night with, look at all this radiation. And they showed the satellite data, and look how they didn't have the data from, so they spent 33 hours without the data because it was spiking so high. Now, one said he caught them where the data was on the NASA website and was removed. And the other said, well, it looks like maybe they were maxing out the instruments. They didn't want to burn out the instruments. Or that was what he implied. And that's why they turned it off. So the one that caught him removing it, I would be right, you know, I would say he's rightfully annoyed. But why would they be at least not even telling us that there's all this radiation and what's causing it and all that? And I have some theories about that. And before I get to those, why don't I knock out one of these commercial breaks, because I cut it too close last week, and I don't want to do that again. So let's see. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
There are reports that say sitting all day at work is just as unhealthy as smoking. There is a hot new health trend called earthing, where you leave your shoes at home and you go out for a walk in the park. However, most of us work all day. This is where Serenity Rug comes in. Serenity Rug is meant to let you feel the grass beneath your feet while you have to stay inside and get your work done. This revolutionary footrest encourages movement and blood flow so you can feel better while working. Relieves muscle tension, improves circulation at your own desk while you're working. Anyway, please check out SerenityRug.com. That's SerenityRug.com.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
Hi, so I'm back, and just to finish my story before we have a caller, and I encourage anybody that would like to join this conversation to give us a call in. One of these channels, actually two of them, Mr. MBB 333 and Higher Truth Channel, they're both describing symptoms that people are experiencing with this higher UV ray solar wind that we're getting. And, you know, people are experiencing extra severe sunburns, they're getting headaches, they're getting, you know, sinus headaches, they're just general malaise, and it's attributable to this, at least in their research. And particularly Mr. MBB 333, he's done specific studies over time where he watches the sun with his satellite data, and he watches coronal holes, and then he I don't know how he found his sample crowd, but he would interview them as to how, you know, what kind of symptoms they were having. And he found a definite positive correlation between when a coronal hole is facing the Earth, you know, shooting all these the solar wind at us, and people's general feelings of well-being. And his wife suffers reactions to this. He himself suffers reactions to this. I can hear it on Higher Truth Channel. He doesn't talk about himself, but he talks about other people. He puts up pictures of people with severe sunburns and headaches, and, you know, just they're both encouraging, you know, you keep yourself hydrated, keep yourself shaded, stay indoors if you can, wear hats and sleeves and long pants, and, you know, keep yourself out of the sun, because not only are we getting extra high UVB rays, but UVC rays, which normally never reach the ground, are reaching the ground. And I had never heard of UVC rays before. It's a new one on me because, it never reached the ground in my life before, at least that I was aware of. And so these can do deep damage to you, particularly, you know, the UVB will burn you. The UVC will be even worse. But apparently the UVB is what helps you produce, your body produce vitamin D. And, you don't want to allow yourself to get sunburned, but that is what helps you produce vitamin D, whereas UVC will actually deplete your body of vitamin D, vitamin D3. And Higher Truth Channel at least is recommending that people make sure that they're taking their vitamin D3 supplements that they normally would, because they're not getting the protection they think they need if they had managed to tan up or whatever. And just like some people, you know, in everyday life are more susceptible to sunburn than other people, some people are reacting more severely to this UV situation that we have now than other people. In fact, I had a family member this past weekend was sitting out in the shade at a park ramada with some other family members, and they weren't reacting. But she was in the shade, and she had a hat on, and she had sleeves on, and she could feel herself sunburning. She said it could feel like she was blistering, and she was in the shade. This was just the reflected light that was hitting her, and she was reacting, severely to it. Now, she has the white Irish skin that I've got, and so, you would expect her to be burning more easily, particularly this was in Tucson, which is not far from Phoenix, 100 miles away, and it's at a higher elevation. So if we're getting really high UV rays in Phoenix at a higher elevation, you're going to be getting more of it because you have less atmosphere above you to shield you. And so this shook the family up so much that they said, you have to go to see a doctor now. You know, why are you reacting so much to just your skin is reacting to sunlight when you're not even out in the sun? You're sitting in the shade. And, you know, she's been complaining for years. She doesn't like living in the Arizona desert because it's too bright for her. And I said, you know, I told her, well, she's going to see the doctor this week. I said, you be sure that that doctor knows that we're in a very high UV situation right now. And, you know, it's fine and dandy that other people aren't reacting, but a lot of people are, and it's not just her. So I don't know what he can do for her, because I don't know any mainstream doctors that have anything besides pharmaceuticals in their bag of tricks. So, you know, I do what I can do. I brought her over these big bags of blueberries and strawberries, because now this is, I need to put a link in my site. I stumbled on this a few years ago, you know, because of my tendency to burn myself, and I've just been staying out of it. I don't even go out in the parks if I can help it. My eyes get super tired, you know, driving in the super bright light, even with my polarized sunglasses on. But I stumbled on a video that Mike Adams put on. He's from naturalnews.com, and he was talking about the source of the word rednecks. And that rednecks, you know, you think of their Southerners or Hicks, whatever their personalities or political persuasions are, that term actually comes from people with sunburned necks. And he went on quite an extensive video about, if you're sunburning, it's because you don't have enough vitamin B, the B complex vitamins, in your system. He went on and on about vitamin B and the vitamin B complex, you know, multiple vitamin Bs. And I thought, wow. Yeah, I sunburn easily. You know, I grew up in upstate New York in the Hudson Valley. And, you know, I would sunburn there. I've had a few severe sunburns growing up. Well, the worst in my life was out on the Long Island Sound on my uncle's boat. It was actually my grandfather's brother's boat. And they had just invented sunscreen at the time. That's how long ago it was. I was about 19, and 8 was the highest you could get, the 8 sunscreen. And my date that I was with, he only had a bottle of level 4 sunscreen. And so that was what I had. I forgot my bottle. So I used his level 4, and it didn't help me. I suppose it did. It would have been worse, but it was horrible. Absolutely horrible. I didn't feel this burn coming on. And by the end of the day, though, I was just red like a lobster. I was in a lot of pain for like 6 weeks. And, you know, had I gone to the hospital, they probably would have checked me in. But, you know, I was a teenager. I was tough, and I toughed it out. I went back to my summer job. And I remember the one guy laughing at me. I'd be sitting there working, and all of a sudden, and I'd be pulling at my collar. He goes, I'm not used to seeing spontaneous bursts of pain. And so, you know, I peeled like a snake a few weeks later. And, you know, the skin's never been quite the same since then. But what can I tell you? Now, that was, you know, I spent a day out on a boat, which is stupid, with a lot of reflected light. And since then, though, you know, I'd say maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I came across this video by Mike Adams. He says, you burn if you're not up on your vitamin B vitamins. So I just Googled up, okay, what foods contain vitamin B? And there's a lot of them out there, but I said, love berries. Okay, berries contain vitamin B. And I'm still living in Arizona, so I started experimenting because, you know, once after that Long Island Sound incident, I moved to Arizona. And, you know, my whole family moved to Arizona. And I could start burning within 5 minutes of being outside in the Arizona sun. And so I just learned to be inside and wear hats. And, you know, some people carry umbrellas. And you see it on the street in Arizona, people carrying umbrellas. It's not unusual, or, you know, it's the equivalent of a parasol. Put a ruffle on it and you have a parasol, you know, to keep the sun off. And, or you got the big hats just around the neck and the whole thing. And or you're hanging off the back of a hat if you don't have a wide brim. And anyway, so that's what I did for like 20, 30 years. And then I found this Mike Adams video and I started eating berries. If I know I'm going to be out in the sun that day, I mean, I should be eating them every day, berries, because they're full of antioxidants and the vitamin B complexes. But I'll put a big handful in a fruit smoothie and I'll drink that down. And that day I can go outside for hours and not get sunburned. And this is just, it's been a wonderful change to my life. And, you know, so I tell everybody I can, that, you know, about it. Yeah, I felt kind of bad. There was this woman who came into a restaurant I was in last night. And she was kind of blonde and sitting across the way, and she had gotten a sunburn that day. And I just didn't have the nerve to walk up to a stranger. But if I'm in a conversation with somebody, I'll tell them right off the bat. And or as I'm telling you on this radio show now, this has been a wonderful change to my life. Eat berries. And I can go to the zoo for several hours at a time and not get burned. I can ride my bike for over an hour and not get burned. And, you know, of course, it's been a few months since I've ridden my bike. I should take it up again. But this UVB, UVC situation has me a bit scared. And so if I'm going to ride my bike out in the sun for any length of time, you know, meaning over 15 minutes, I'm going to do it in the early morning or the late afternoon when the sun is pretty low in the horizon. And so there's a lot of atmosphere between me and the solar wind. Well, the solar wind, and I don't know about the other solar wind that's coming from another direction. So going on about that, as long as you keep berries under your belt, and you can identify where to get your berries at discount. I found a wonderful dollar store near me, the 90 cent only store. That's the name of the chain, 99 cent only store. And they have a wonderful, inexpensive produce section. I can't call it organic, so I just wash my food really well. But you can get a big bucket of strawberries right now for a buck. You know, it's something that we, you know, $2.50 to $5 at the local Kroger Fries. So, you know, berries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, they all seem to work for me. And so I totally want you to remember that. But anyway, now where is it going to go with that? Oh, as for the source of this second directional thing, these three scientific YouTube channels that I love watching, because you're getting stuff off of them before there's any scientific papers even written on this stuff. I mean, the data's there. Somebody needs to write papers and get them published because you're not hearing it anywhere in the mainstream media about we're getting solar wind from another direction. That could be another planet, you know, that's a gaseous giant. Now, Jupiter does radiate more than it takes in from the sun. So we know that Jupiter has a source of its own radiation, but it's not necessarily radiating in the frequencies that a brown dwarf would radiate in. And Higher Truth Channel has been pointing out the lithium signatures in the radiation that can only come from a brown dwarf, and Jupiter's not big enough to be a brown dwarf. And the other thing, but the BP Earthwatch channel says that Nibiru is Jupiter, and he has his beliefs for it. He showed us pictures last night of Venus and Jupiter, and it's wonderful when they show these planetary animations. There's a website, I believe it's called eyeinthesky.org, and you can put in a date and it'll give you the diagram of where the planets are in the solar system on that date, and you can dial it forward and dial it back and watch them go forward and backwards, and where are they, you know, when you want to look at this aspect and that aspect. And the BP Earthwatch is adamant that Jupiter is Nibiru, but what he showed me last night proved to me that it's not, that there is actually a brown dwarf out there that NASA's not telling us about. Because what he showed, and people have been noticing, Venus has been extra bright these days, and it shouldn't be that bright. Venus, I mean, it's closest to us right now in its orbit. It's between us and the sun as it orbits the sun. It completes its year faster than the Earth does because it's closer to the sun. But so where it is right now, it's kind of like it's a little bit north of us, but it's, you know, looking west, you see the bright evening star, and it should show us, because most of it is the night side of Venus facing the Earth, we should just see a little of the daytime of Venus facing the sun, and then the back side is the night side, and so we just see the crescent of the daytime facing us. But what Venus is right now, it's brighter than a crescent would show us. If you put a telescope on it or binoculars, it's got this gibbous, which is not quite round, but it's like most of its night side is lit up with whatever's hitting its atmosphere. And it looks like it's hitting its atmosphere. If you were to look at Venus and say, okay, there's that ball in the sky and there's light shining on it, it would be like from behind you and down, like in the south. So it's coming from like your south behind you towards Venus and the sun. And of course, you know, this is having the reactions with the sun, with all these the solar winds hitting at different directions. And both of these channels Deep Earth Watch and Higher Truth Channel will show you pictures of the solar wind hitting the Earth from the sun side, and then once in a while the arrows will reverse in the tail of this, and you'll see these bubbles and ripples of the arrows reversing on the night side of the Earth, coming back towards the Earth, and just these eddies and currents and blowing through cross directions, you know, so you're looking at solar wind from two directions, and that's what I'm seeing when I look at this gibbous shape of Venus, when Venus should be a crescent. So there's some wild stuff going on out in the solar system. We're having a lot of volcanoes. The volcanoes numbers are much higher than they normally would be this time of year. And the earthquakes are higher, and my screen just went dark. I'm talking so much. Anyway, I'll try to find some articles on the volcanoes, too. But there's stuff going on. I don't think this planet that has swung in, that I believe has swung in from its 3,000-year orbit, it's swinging in like a comet. It's going to swing out again. I don't think it's past us yet. I don't think we've seen the worst yet. I think we're going to see more volcanoes and more earthquakes and more devastation, and until they absolutely cannot deny that there's a planet there. Now, why would they deny that there's a planet there? Oh, they always gave the theory, oh, we didn't want to tell you stuff because you might panic. So they don't tell us an asteroid's going by super close between us and the moon because they don't want us to panic. You know, they don't want to have people panicking. And so, you know, I think people have a right to panic. And sometimes, you know, maybe people want to make good with their God before they meet their demise. If we're going to get hit with an asteroid, which they think, you know, eliminated the dinosaurs, if it's going to eliminate, you know, 90% of the Earth, life on Earth, you know, we have a right to know and make our peace with each other, you know, as best we can, our families and our God. And, you know, just because somebody on high thought, oh, well, these people are, you know, what they don't know won't hurt them is wrong, absolutely wrong. But I think there's a more devious reason than that. And refer to an article here and explain my reasoning, and then I got to take this call. He's been waiting so patiently so long. But anyway, this is an article from History. This is at AccuWeather.com, how a blood moon eclipse spared Christopher Columbus from disaster on final voyage to the New World. In 1492, Christopher Columbus made his infamous voyage across the Atlantic Ocean to the New World that set the stage for future voyages. However, his fourth and final voyage almost ended in disaster if it were not for the help of the moon. Over a decade after his first trip to the New World, Columbus set sail on his fourth and final voyage that was riddled with problems. His fleet in the 1502 voyage across the Atlantic was comprised of four ships, but not all of them made it to their intended destination. The four ships that he had were being eaten by worms that would eat the wood, so the ships started becoming unstable and leaking, said Mel Blake, associate professor of physics at the University of North Alabama. Later that year, Columbus and his crew landed on the island now known as Jamaica with only two of his four ships. However, these two ships were damaged, so they were stranded on the island until relief arrived. At that time, Jamaica was inhabited by local people called the Arawak Indians, who decided to help Columbus and his men. They showed up with large ships and gusts, G-U-S-T-S, and it all seemed very impressive, so the local people helped them, Blake said. For months, the Arawak Indians helped Columbus and his crew as they waited to be rescued, giving them food and supplies. This went on from about June of 1503, when they arrived, until well into the fall, until finally the local people were getting tired of helping them, Blake said. Eventually, the Arawak Indians refused to help Columbus and his crew any longer, a decision that could spell disaster, as they were not equipped to survive on the island for an extended period of time. Now, why didn't they volunteer to help with the farming and stuff? I don't know. Anyway, Christopher Columbus knew that he had no way of getting off king, and he was waiting for relief, so he needed a way out. He decided to use blatant trickery, how a blood moon would come to Columbus's aid. Back in the time of Columbus, they used astronomical charts to help navigate while at sea. They also had astronomical acts that would entail positions of the moon as well as events such as lunar eclipses. Columbus had a copy of an almanac that described a total lunar eclipse that would happen on the evening of February 29th, 1504. This eclipse would be his opportunity to convince the local people to help him again. 3 days before the eclipse, Columbus told the Arawak Indians that his God was very angry and that they were no longer helping him. As a repercussion, his God would turn off the moon until they decided to help again. This may have sounded like a ridiculous claim to the local people, but 3 days later, Columbus's prediction began to unfold. The eclipse started happening, and the moon started to get a little nibble taken out of it as the Earth's shadow crossed the face of the moon, Blake said. It turned this blood-red color the way total lunar eclipses do. This terrified the locals. They promised to help Columbus again as long as he restored the moon back to normal. Shortly before the eclipse ended, Columbus announced that his God was pleased again and that the moon would return to normal. Moments later, the eclipse was over. The moon appeared as it normally does in the night sky, and Columbus's trick had worked perfectly. The locals would now supply him and his crew with food and supplies throughout the remainder of their stay until relief arrived. So, this article even goes on more. While this may sound like an ingenious trick to the benefit of Columbus, there was a chance that it could have backfired. It was a bit of a risk because the tables at the time for the eclipses weren't as accurate as they are now, where you can predict within the minute. That if the total lunar eclipse had happened a day later or was not completely visible in that part of the world, it would have panned out as Columbus had hoped. Additionally, if the weather was not in favor of Columbus, his predicted lunar eclipse would have not been visible, wasting the opportunity to take advantage of such a rare event. But Columbus's plan worked out perfectly to the benefit of him and his crew. Later that year, relief arrived to rescue Columbus, and he was able to return to Europe. So that's where he had information that the locals didn't have, and he used it to trick them into something. And that's what I think is going on here with NASA not discovering, not discussing, or the space, the various telescopic space agencies, people that plan, that map out the heavens, are not telling us about this extra planet that's swinging by. And, my hat's off to Higher Truth Channel. He proved a couple of days ago, he showed us where they've actually identified that the moon's orbit is changing. It's becoming more elongated than it was. I mean, it's a round orbit. It's always got one face facing towards us because of the tidal lock, which is why I don't think the TRAPPIST-1 planets are habitable, because they're in tidal lock with their sun. They have one day, one side that's always day and one side that's always night. And our moon has one side that's always facing the Earth and one side that's always facing away. And but the orbit is becoming more elongated. And he showed up, if you pull up one of the videos from his, like within the past week on Higher Truth Channel, he goes through 190 papers that are all in published journals acknowledging the possibility of a companion or another planet or another star that we're not seeing. And one in particular was a paper about the elongation of the Earth's moon's orbit and how that can be accounted for in the math by either a rocky terrestrial planet about 30 AU out, and an AU is an astronomical unit. That's the distance from the Earth to the sun, and that's defined as an astronomical unit. So it could be a rocky planet as close as 30 AUs out, astronomical units out, or it could be a gaseous giant, approximately 1.4 times the size of Jupiter, that's super out there, 200 AU. That could be accounting for the elongation of the moon's orbit. And that paper offered no other reason, no other possibility as to what could be causing the elongation of the orbit, but they dismissed it out of hand. They just said, well, that just seems absurd. And they don't explain why they dismissed it. They just said, well, it couldn't be that, and so we have to keep trying to figure out what it is. So, I don't know. So my hat's off to him to pointing that out. So between that, the elongation of the moon's orbit, which nobody's denying, and the light shining on Venus from its night side when we should be seeing just its night side, that has convinced me that there's something out there that they know about and they're not telling us. Our science agencies, you know, that our taxpayers pay for, they're not telling us. We don't know why. Oh, we don't want them to. Well, when they have all these extra volcanoes and they have all these extra earthquakes, you know, why should they prepare for them? You know, there's always preppers out there. They're not so crazy. They know somebody's been lying to them. They just smell a rat. And so people are out there gardening, and I've been doing a little bit myself. I'm not growing enough to feed myself, but, you know, I've got some tomato plants that are coming up, and actually I've got them on a north-facing side where they're not going to get a whole lot of sun, but they're going to get reflected sun. And maybe they'll burn, or maybe they won't, like my family members. But, yeah, it's a big long story. But I think there's a nefarious reason. You know, I've been keeping an eye on the politics, too, and listening to what the Hillary crowd and the MSM would call fake news. But when all they do is quote the mainstream news in articles that we're supposed to forget about, you know, it's things out of the Washington Post and New York Times, and they are really trying to overthrow the government. And put this together with the story we talked about weeks ago, serious disclosure, where, yes, we have actually captured alien technology from Roswell and Tesla's papers before, you know, after he died and things like that, that our government is planning an alien hoax in order to force an alien attack. They're going to hoax an alien attack in order to try to stampede the world into a big one-world tyrannical government, a police state, in order to protect us from the aliens. And the aliens are not planning anything like that. They would have done it by now if they're going to wipe us out, because obviously they're thousands of years ahead of us in technology. They could have wiped us out easily. But I think what they're going to do, since this guy at Serious Disclosure, maybe I'm jumping too far ahead for you guys, but there's this guy with all the documents from the deep state. He's got the documents and the whistleblowers that proves that, yes, they are considering. It's even in the WikiLeaks email with John Podesta and Hillary that, you know, they're considering the hoax, a big alien attack on the Earth as a hoax, using our own people, our own technologies that we've captured now from the aliens to stampede us all into this. I think they're going to time it exactly when this bypassing planet is causing the most damage to the Earth. That's what I think is going to happen. And they're going to pretend they have a weapon they don't have necessarily, but they're going to want to use it to stampede us all into sign us up for the New World Order police state. Just sign us up. We submit. I ain't going to submit. I've tried to been making good with my God, and it's like, I'm going to trust, you know, that the world is the way it's supposed to be. You know, Jesus, everywhere he went, and particularly after he rose from the dead, it was peace be with you. Have no fear, you know, depending which translation you're reading. So I'm not going to have any fear. I'm just going to do what I'm doing and try to warn people. And, you know, I can't say a volcano won't hit you, but it won't matter if you make good with God. You know, be an honest, loving person. And all that. And I need to take a phone call here. Hi, is this Ed?
Yes, it's me.
Thank you for your patience.
You're mixing some Christianity in there with some other things.
Well, that's okay.
And I'm just wondering. I mean, Jesus never said anything about Nibiru. And the Old Testament never said anything about Nibiru.
No, he didn't, but he said there would be signs and wonders in the sky. There would be signs and wonders in the sky, and there would be wars and rumors of wars, and there would be, you know, earthquakes or whatever, you know.
Okay, I've been waiting a long time.
I'm just relating. I can't prepare. I can't stop this interplanetary stuff from happening. So that's where I get my solace.
Let me give you an idea here. So this Nibiru is supposedly in an orbit around the sun, and it's a planet, okay? It's supposed to be a nasty planet. It causes all kinds of stuff. Okay, so the orbit is something like 3,000 years, maybe 3,500 years, something like that. So that makes sense to me in a way, because it was about 1400 BC that they had that huge explosion of Thera, the island that is north of Crete and south of Greece, that the whole island exploded, and it caused a massive tsunami that wiped out the Cretan civilization and probably threw up so much dust and stuff in the atmosphere that it could have caused the biblical, you know, the thing in the Bible about the plagues and the darkness, you know, during the day and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. Okay, so maybe that makes sense in a way.
The destruction of the Minoan civilization 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And what the Minoan civilization,
what
was that? Greece?
That's right. So that would have been probably affected the whole area. And that came down to us, of course, because the Greek civilization, you know, continued, and they had legends, and there was also Plato, you know, mentioned Atlantis, and you know, the continent had disappeared into the sea, and that could have been the Minoan civilization. That could have been that island. That now is, like, yeah. So there's a town called Santorini, which is actually, it's a beautiful
windswept city
of white buildings. It's on the edge of a crater. That's the edge of what is the left of the crater of the volcano. You know, it's pretty scary. However, okay, let's say that Nibiru comes by every 3,500 years. Well, that means that in a million years, it would come by, 300 times? No, let's see, 3,000 years. Yeah, 300
times. Yeah, about 300
times. In a million years. So, you know, like what, every time that it comes by, it creates all this disaster? Well, that doesn't even fit into the ice ages. The ice ages, which started a couple million years ago, they couldn't possibly be affected by Nibiru, because Nibiru would have a local effect, but it wouldn't be enough to cause an ice age or for the ice age to get over or something like that. The cycle.
Well, here's a theory. Suppose a lot has to do with what side of the sun, where we are in our year when it goes by, whether it affects us a lot or a little. Yes, it'll affect the sun every time, so everybody gets some extra UV rays at that time.
Maybe
the way where we are in our orbit affects how much of tidal forces get pulling on our planet and causing earthquakes. And
well, let me take advantage of your knowledge of the sun, because I remember a long time ago that you said that you had worked for NOAA and before that you had worked with astronomers here in Arizona, that you were an astronomer. So and the thing that studied the
an
most.
An astronomer is an official term. That's a PhD scientist. I don't have a PhD. I worked for PhD astronomers, and I wrote some code analyzing rotation of the small magnetic features on the sun.
You were a lab assistant or something like that, huh?
Yeah, a research assistant.
No,
I would write code.
Well,
and I would kind of please, you know, I would follow the motion of small magnetic features on the sun, and I would I had the code that drew little arrows as to which way they were going and stuff like that. And I'm seeing these same arrows. And you know, it wasn't a difficult little program, but I wonder if that code migrated and spread out, you know, since I've left there 20 years ago. Drawing these little arrows of the directions of the wind. It's just kind of...
I see. But
it just kind of pleases me to think that maybe that's
the arrows,
my code.
Yeah, of these currents from the sun. Then you're the person I want to ask, okay? Because I've been watching BP Earthwatch, where he has, you know, the solar grams that show the sun rotating, taken from a satellite out in space. Now, this is what puzzles me and confuses me. Is the sun right now not in the middle of a quiet period where there's almost no sunspots?
Yeah, there's no sunspots. That's different from coronal holes.
So if you were looking at it, you would see a perfect, calm, surface without sunspots. Now then, but there's a corona that goes all the way around.
Well, that's limited by our vision. We can only see certain frequencies. But if you use scientific instruments to look at other frequencies, you'll see a lot of stuff going on. But
Can you explain why the coronal hole is such a big deal? Because I would think that the corona is where those ejections are taking place. They're taking place from the corona, which is already kind of like out into space from the sun.
But
when you feel the coronal hole, isn't that a calm area? Isn't that a calm area that goes down the surface where there's nothing coming out of there?
No, well, the surface is what's radiating the solar wind, and the corona is like it's a plasma fog over the whole sun, and it blocks the solar wind from coming off the surface. And so if there's a hole, it can't block the wind, and the wind gets through that hole.
The wind is rising, the wind is being pushed up from the surface of the sun, from all the equivalents of the atomic explosions taking place within the sun itself. So that's a hotter area.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we get a magnetostorm, when we get a magnetostorm and we see the aurora borealis and you've got one of these guys on there, I've listened to them, and they're saying, oh, there's a huge magnetostorm because there's a wave of energy that's coming at 1 million kilometers an hour you know, from the sun. So is that wave of energy that brings all that stuff into the magnetosphere, is that what's giving us the UV rays that we're experiencing?
The solar UV rays? Yeah, and the coronavirus ejections, I don't know if
it's
plasma itself or helium.
Yeah.
But the, those,
like
the, that solar
like
wind
in Gilbert.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, because like this guy in Gilbert, which is pretty close to Chandler, Arizona, he says, you know, goes up
with his UV meter,
and he shows that it's a 10-plus on the UV scale. And, you know, I can almost confirm that, because I spent a couple hours out in the sun yesterday and a couple hours out in the sun today. And I, you know what I feel like? Have you ever opened the oven when the oven's on at like 450 degrees because you need to look at it or something, get a wave of hot air blown at you, and you can feel it on your eyelids? It almost feels like you just scorched
your eyelashes. And it's a lovely, pleasant day in Phoenix today.
And,
but today in Phoenix, it's a lovely cool day. It's, you know, 70s, 80s. It's not bad at all. And yet you feel like it's just too bright. Your eyes hurt. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to be out in this. And,
so
and you just feel the
strength
and you want to get out of it.
So that is coming from solar radiation from these UV rays
The corona is brighter. Right now, the corona is brighter than it normally is. I haven't quite identified what's causing that other than. No, the corona is brighter. So there's when we get these holes, they can be bigger than they normally have been in the past, or sometimes it looks like somebody's like peeling the sun like an orange.
But the corona
itself is brighter, and like Venus itself is brighter. It's something shining on it. Something's causing it to react. The corona to react to plasma.
So here's my question. This is all coming from the sun, right? You're saying that the radiation, the UV that we feel. Then what does it have to do with this planet, this possible planet or brown dwarf or something? Could that be contributing? Is that contributing its own radiation?
It's contributing its own. We're getting some solar wind from a second direction, and you can see that in the maps of the satellite data, animated satellite data of the solar wind coming from the sun, and you see that the arrows. They affect the magnetic field of the Earth, but then there'll be these puffs of arrows coming from the left, coming from the opposite side, from other directions. And we're just looking at a flat surface, so it's a little hard to see exactly where it's coming from.
Then let me suggest that's got to be some kind of brown dwarf, but it's not going to be another planet. Like Nibiru or something, because why would a planet like Nibiru or Jupiter or Saturn or anything, why would they be shooting UV rays at Earth? But certainly, the brown dwarf sun-like body.
You could call the brown dwarf itself a planet, but the odds are really good that it's got a whole bunch of moons with it. And so, by some of Jupiter's moons are larger. Is it Jupiter's moons or is it Neptune's moons? Are larger than Pluto, This is like a planet with planets. It's not a star, so we're calling it a planet, or we're calling it a brown dwarf, but it might have its own planets with it, but they're not necessarily affecting the sun the way the brown dwarf itself is. Now, some of these ancient legends, and if anybody...
thinking that it could be a brown dwarf, thinking this, could be so close to Earth... There was an article that I saw about a week ago that said, our solar system was brushed by a brown dwarf about 100,000 years ago. And what it did is it entered, it skidded by, and it hit the Oort cloud. And the Oort cloud, of course, has billions and billions of little fragments in there, that could turn into asteroids or comets. And it sent a bunch of comets.
Yeah.
Skittering down towards the solar system, the inner solar system, but it said, and then it moved away, and the whole thing took like about a million years, and it only came within like one light year, like about one light year of Earth. Yeah, but that was enough for it to affect the Oort cloud. So I'm just thinking now that is a huge interaction. Now, so the idea that there would be a brown dwarf much, much, much closer to us, is that the idea that there's a brown dwarf that could be, you know, how far do they think the orbit could be? Is it coming in on an ellipse and it's coming closer, and is it going to come out to like about Jupiter's orbit or within like the inner solar system, or how close do they think this is going to get to the sun?
I don't know. I'm looking up how close can it is.
Yeah.
How does this astronomical unit relate to a light year? Now, it's 8 light minutes from the sun to the earth.
Okay.
And I don't know. I'd have to sit down and do a bunch of
math. Oh, wait a minute. So an astronomical unit is how far it is from the earth to the sun, right?
Yeah.
It's an AU.
And the sun is 8 light minutes away. About 8 light minutes.
Right.
But if we have something out there that's maybe it's as close as 200 AU away. That's not that far, right? Neptune is like that,
no.
Right? About that far?
No, Jupiter is about, 20 or something like that, I think. Let's think about
Jupiter,
that.
Okay, so Neptune would be like twice
Earth
that.
From the sun, if Earth is 93 million miles from the sun, and that's one astronomical unit, and then Mars is about twice as far as Earth from the sun, so that would be two astronomical units, and then there's the asteroid belt, that would be maybe 3 or 4, and then Jupiter would be like, 7 or 8 or something, 7, 8, maybe 9 units, and then Saturn would be twice that much, I think it was 19. I was looking at this just the other day. Each planet gets almost twice as far away in astronomical units as the previous planet.
Yeah, so Neptune's about 30 AU away. If there was a rocky planet sharing Neptune's orbit, that would about 30 AU away. That would account for the elongation of the moon's orbit around the Earth.
And they
because
do
it's
think
been
that's
perturbed
happening.
By the
they really feel that.
Well,
the
higher
original
show that
to me.
Yeah, he cited a written paper. A journal paper published. One of those official scientific journals.
Mm-hmm.
That the moon's orbit has been elongated, terrestrial planet, a rocky planet, at about the distance of Neptune would account for it. Or or a gaseous giant out at 200 AU would account for it, which would be, about 12 times the distance of Neptune, right? Because if Neptune's about 30 AU out there. So,
We don't know how big the incoming orb is. Is the problem? See, they don't have an idea of how big that unknown body is. It could be as big as Jupiter, or it could be 50 times as big as Jupiter. So it's hard to say.
If it was 1.4 times the size of Jupiter, then it would have to be 200 AU out. But on the other hand, if it's taking a swing in. You know, like comets do, when they come in, they have really long-term orbits, but when they swing in past the sun, they're really fast, and then they zip out again. So if this thing is zipping by us, you know, it comes in fast, and it goes out and slows down again, if it's only 1.4 times the size of Jupiter, it's actually not that far off the size of the red dwarf of the TRAPPIST-1 planets, which isn't all that big.
Okay.
It's like that red dwarf there is so much smaller than our sun that they're saying that all of those planets that are Earth-like or Earth-sized, they're orbiting what would be inside the orbit of Mercury. They're orbiting their star so much closer than our planets are orbiting our sun. So it's hard to get a mental grasp on the scales that we're dealing with. So I'm looking at the universe today, how far is Neptune from the sun?
I think NASA... those astronomers have not really thought about this very hard, because if those planets are just whipping around that star at the speed they are, then they could not possibly inhabit life. Anything living there would be pretty damn dizzy, you know, going around at that speed. Plus the fact that they would be, the sun side always faces the sun, the night side always faces away. I don't think
they're always tidal locked. So They had this, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. They had this big NASA, what do you call it? Press conference. Telling us how much these planets are like the Earth. I'm like, they're not at all.
Suzanne, I believe that was hype and jive for additional funding.
Yes, and what was the purpose?
Additional funding to put something out there.
You think
that's
it? Was that? You think it was that simple? You think it was that simple? You think it was that simple? Just for funding?
Technical.
Simple? You think it was that simple? That's all they wanted?
I think so. But they wanted to brag that they had found seven planets around one star. But I don't see how that would. I don't understand how the planets are the size that they are. That they're Earth-sized, or some of them are larger than Earth. How could they be Earth-sized, but they're whipping around at that speed with such a tight orbit? You'd think that they would get in each other's way. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't believe
it. Yeah, and I'm sure they're tidally affecting each other. I'm sure they're tidally affecting each other because they said, oh, they're so close to each other that when they go by each other, you can see their disks in the sky, you know, like we see the moon, you know. They're not like points of light like we normally see Jupiter and Mercury and Mars and stuff. That they're so close together,
Suzanne,
that they're actually disks.
You know, what we're on right now, what we're talking about right now, was not the reason that I called you. It was not the reason I called you. What I called you is that I just found evidence on the Internet, and actually something from about 5 years ago, that seems to prove that global warming is not a unique event on Earth. And also it says that it is not occurring because of anything that humanity is doing. The global warming is not occurring because of, you know, man's manipulating nature through, burning fossil fuels and stuff like that. On a site called Above Top Secret, www.abovetopsecret.com,
there's a
writer called www.fizorg.com who writes and says, global warming is not a unique event on Earth. Here is evidence that there are great changes occurring not only on this planet, but on all the planets of our solar system. First of all, he quotes National Geographic. NationalGeographic.com said, and I've been waiting to say this name because it's a beautiful name, Habibulo Abdusamatov, head of the St. Petersburg Pulkovo Astronomical Observatory in Russia, says Mars data has evidence that the current global warming on Earth is being caused by changes in the sun. So they have found that Mars data is Mars is getting warmer. Mars is getting warmer, presumably over the last 20 years or so. That's one item. Now, there's several items. Let me go on. Then MIT wrote about the planet Pluto from web.mit.edu. It says the average surface temperature of the nitrogen ice on Pluto has increased slightly less than 2 degrees Celsius over the past 14 years, unquote. So Pluto is moving farther away from the sun and continuing to warm, even despite the fact that it's moving farther away than the sun. So it says something doesn't fit into solar constant theory, the solar constant theory. The sun does change its warmth regulator, evidently, you know. Then finally,
could it be stuff in the solar system changing it?
Exactly. People need to open their minds and look at this balance out there. People need to look at this information. I think it's been suppressed because this came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
From space.com on Jupiter, the latest images could provide evidence that Jupiter is in the midst of a global change that can modify temperatures by as much as 10 degrees Fahrenheit on different parts of the globe. So Jupiter is getting warmer. And then finally, the final last one is from MIT on Triton. And is Triton a moon of Saturn, I think?
I think that's right. I confuse Triton and Titan.
Oh, yeah, me too. So the quote is, at least since 1989, Triton has been undergoing a period of global warming. Percentage-wise, it's a very large increase, said Elliot, professor of Earth, Atmospheric, and Planetary Sciences, director of the Wallace Astrophysical Observatory. He said there's been a 5% increase on the absolute temperature scale on Triton, and if it was on Earth, it would be like Earth would be experiencing a jump of about 22 degrees Fahrenheit. Like 22 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, Triton
Earth.
Is the moon of Neptune.
Oh, okay.
Triton is the moon of Neptune. So
that's way out there. Yeah, that's way out there.
Yeah.
So isn't it, it's amazing that they can even tell what the temperatures are on Triton. I mean, it's so far out. So the person concludes the argument saying, so there is global warming on at least four other bodies in our solar system that coincides with the recent warming on Earth. Doesn't this point strongly towards the sun or some other cosmic force as the cause? So what do you think of that?
But the sun, the sun itself is brighter, than it normally is, and it's either a natural cyclical thing of the sun, but that doesn't account for the solar wind coming from a second direction, or the lithium signature in that solar wind. So, I don't know. There is stuff going on out there, and it's amazing that these warming trends are like all at the same time, or if it started a little bit earlier out. Near Pluto, that maybe something was going by it. I don't know.
Maybe they were
I wouldn't want to believe now. That...
Maybe they being affected. Maybe Triton and Pluto and then Jupiter were being affected by the same forces, and it could be by the sun, but it could also be by another factor, which could be, as you suggest, an incoming brown dwarf probably a brown dwarf would do it because they would have more of the radiation and they would be able to generate the same kind of rays, that the sun does. Same kind of UV rays. And that might have warmed them up. Maybe they felt it before we did.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of it all. I just know that we're getting really high UV rays on the Earth, and people should be protecting themselves and their pets. It's funny, I think it was Mr. MBB333 told the story of his dog would go out. His dog loved to lay in the sun his whole life. And he would go out, and he would lay down, and he would get up, and laying in the shade wasn't enough for him. He had to come indoors to get away from it. And the dog would keep doing it. He couldn't make him lay. And that's kind of like what my family member has been doing. She doesn't even like being in the shade anymore. She's, because something's irritating her, driving her in. So let me take one more commercial break here because I need to take two, every show. And we'll be back in a minute, and then we can wrap it up here.
Body and Soul Awareness is a radio show geared towards anyone ready to reconnect with their true selves and get back into balance. Spend 90 minutes with us, Stephanie and Oksana, business owners and friends who are eager to discuss the importance of taking responsibilities of your own well-being. We are two ladies on a mission to be the best possible version of ourselves while helping others to do the same. We will share our own life experiences and practical knowledge of how to take responsibility of your own well-being by implementing lasting lifestyle changes.
Yes, there are lots of toxins out there. Yes, there are lots of bad things going on in the world, and even people with bad intentions. But no, we are not here to talk about that. We're here to help you to discover positive lifestyle changes to help you navigate through ingeniously designed chaos. Join us and our guest speakers while we discuss topics like natural living, nutrition, skincare, healing arts, consciousness, meditation, self-awareness, spirituality, herbalism, body energy, movement, and more.
Join us live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time, to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal radio show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
Need a reason to stay up on Thursday night? Late Night Across America with Michael and Debbie is the new show of returning veteran internet hosts Michael J. Weber and Debbie Lewis. Late Night Across America with Michael and Debbie will cover as many topics as they can in pursuit of knowledge. It's the only way to make informed decisions. It'll be worth staying up for. So join us from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. Central, every Thursday night on Freedomizer Radio.
Okay, and so we're back. And so we can't blame global warming on humanity because it's happening on other planets in the solar system. And so we can't let them try to tax us with all this climate change agenda as if we could affect the climate. You know, there's a lot larger forces out there. Yeah, we can dirty up our air a lot, but there's a lot larger forces out there than, you know, us. You have anything else to say, Ed?
In Above Top Secret, I just went to page 2 on this item, and one respondent says, I don't buy the Planet X thingy until I see it with my own eyes. He wants to see it with his own.
Yeah.
You know what? That kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, it's very hard to believe something that you haven't seen yet. No, but maybe they're seeing it and they're just not telling us. I don't know. And
yeah,
it is
hard. Planet X being Nibiru, I've always found it really hard, and I always thought it was really absurd. We would know about it if it was coming through. And I really was really questioning it, you know, it just think, oh, there's something wrong. They're just not, you know, it's not there. We're not seeing it. But the scientific data is pointing to it. You know, the elongation of the moon's orbit is one thing, but the other thing was like a shock last night where they're showing this picture of Venus, and here's this guy, BP Earthwatch, saying, no, it's Jupiter. Nibiru is Jupiter. Don't let him confuse you. And then he shows me a picture of Venus that's lit. It's lit from behind us while Jupiter is actually on the other side of the sun right now. So if Jupiter were shining light on Venus, it would be in the same crescent that we're seeing from the sun, pretty much. It wouldn't be lit from behind. So Venus is being lit from behind right now.
I like good old BP, but he'd be stuck with this idea in his head that I think he needs to get rid of, and that is that Jupiter is Nibiru. Jupiter's been sitting there in an orbit. What does he think, that Jupiter suddenly comes out of its orbit every once in a while and swoops in around the sun or something? Acts like some kind of strange bird or something?
I don't know. I think he says his orbit, which maybe isn't totally round either, kind of comes too close to the asteroid belt, whose orbit isn't totally round, and knocks a few loose, and they come in, you know, and start pelting the inner planets. I think that's what he's thinking.
Suzanne?
But, yeah.
Suzanne, one final thing. I have a way of cooling off and not having to worry about the cosmic ray activity. Here's somebody who wrote that he finds the idea of galactical alignment is very interesting. It stands to reason that the increased cosmic ray activity we are being exposed to in the is as the solar system comes into line with the disk of the Milky Way, and that should have some kind of effect on us. And this is in a book he read called The Chilling Stars, A New Theory of Climate Change. The Chilling Stars, A New Theory of Climate Change by Richard Gray. It indicates through the studies that are done that the increased cosmic ray activity should have a cooling effect on our planet. A cooling effect, and that might have had something to do with the ice ages. It would be good to see more studies done in this area.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Now, I don't understand.
Yeah, there have been correlations of the fewer sunspots you have, the cooler the Earth gets.
But do you know anything particular about galactical alignment, that the solar system is aligning
I've heard of it.
A new way with the galaxy?
I've heard of it, that we kind of drift north and south of the galactic disk as we orbit the galaxy.
Okay.
But it's...
And that the cosmic rays...
I don't know.
This
is getting beyond where I can think.
Could they even be coming from the black hole that's at the center of the Milky Way or something? Could there be so many suns packed into the inner part of the galaxy that they create a huge amount of cosmic rays that might be catching us as we move out of the way of like a dust cloud or gas cloud or something like that?
Maybe.
That's
totally logical.
Do you think we're okay inside a house? If we're inside an apartment or a house, are we fairly safe from cosmic rays and UV rays? Or are they? Wait, are they two different things?
Well, I think there's X-rays and gamma rays going on out there too, and I don't think we're safe from those.
And those are
I
not
don't know.
From the sun. Are the X-ray and gamma rays coming from the sun also?
Not necessarily. Some of the X-rays are coming from the sun. I don't think they necessarily all are. And the cosmic rays are coming from beyond the sun somewhere. So, I mean, that's the beauty of having the magnetic field. The magnetic field of the Earth generally protects us from all of this stuff. Right. And that's why going into space is so dangerous, because you end up with this stuff pelting you above the atmosphere. And, I mean, NASA just put out a warning like a month ago that air travelers need to be careful because they're so high up in the atmosphere, they're getting these cosmic rays, and they're actually doing brain damage on people. Yeah. You know, but that one little mention in the mainstream, and like it was on the front page of Drudge once, if you can call Drudge the mainstream, but... Yeah, and he linked to a NASA page about this. And in fact, I have some friends that are going to be traveling really soon, and I don't know what else to suggest to them other than eat some berries. I don't know how you protect yourself from cosmic rays. Don't get on the plane and it didn't go out. Not to throw you off.
How about for us that don't travel? Would we be well off to put some tin foil in our windows or something like that? I mean, is there some way to get around it or to help us out?
Yeah, we only have 90 seconds yet, but that is what Higher Truth Channel recommends, is wrapping some cardboard and tinfoil and blocking up your windows. And, I've got some blinds. I'll just close the blinds. But, maybe that's not the same. But I don't know that tinfoil would stop cosmic rays or X-rays. I guess it would stop X-rays. You know, we used to have little foil packs that we would carry our film in when we're putting our cameras through security X-ray machines. But now we put our whole bodies through, and we think we're supposed to be all right from it, so I don't fly much. And
this is fascinating. You got to do another show about this.
It is fascinating. Maybe. I am running out of time here. I'm going to have to sign off and thank everybody for tuning in. And please tune in again next week, and we'll have another exciting topic. I think if I can get the scheduling right with the guests, we have an interesting take on the vaccine industry. And with that, thank you, everybody, and talk to you next week.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.